Mike Tomlin should walk into this news conference today. You know that one gif where the guy walks in and he's all, I'm the man type thing?
He's shrugging his shoulders, just in pure joy.
Yes. Mike Tomlin has earned that today. He should just strut in there like that.
He should walk in and just say, hey, 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 everybody. Hello.
I love it.
Big man on campus.
I love it. The Lone Ranger, as Jay Glazer called him on that decision. Should be interesting here today. I'm particularly interested off the top.
Good afternoon. As always, I'll start with a quick review of our last performance. I think when I look back and think about Sunday night's game, the first thing that comes to mind is the environment. I thought it was just an excellent football environment. I thought our fans were special. We don't take those things for granted, man. Those home game, primetime television football games, just the way that it inspires us and energizes us as a collective. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that. And it makes me excited about this next opportunity. Monday Night Football is a precious thing, and it's just really awesome to know that we get an opportunity to do it and do it in Acrisure Stadium in front of our fans. I thought that they were significant in terms of how the game unfolded from a momentum perspective, crowd noise, et cetera, was just an asset to us. Looking at how we performed in game, I thought we warmed up offensively. I thought we warmed up for a lot of reasons. Obviously, Russ having to knock the rust off, being a significant amount of time since he's played in stadium football, being a component, but also just a continual shuffling that we have up front. Ryan McCollum getting an opportunity to start. Oftentimes when you're changing, collectives up front, it takes a series or two to gain your footing and the type of cohesion you need to be successful, and particularly to win weighty moments, possession down ball. I'd like us to, warm up to put possession down ball execution a little quicker. I thought that defined our performance in the first half. We were settling for field goals because we were losing some possession downs, particularly in the red area. And I thought on the other side that, they were winning those downs in the red area. And I think that's why we kind of went in at halftime. A way that you could describe it is, we had a couple field goals, they had a couple touchdowns until the Beanie interception. And so the Beanie interception obviously was a significant swing in momentum. It got them out of a scoring circumstance and allowed us to finish one of those drives that we hadn't been finishing in the first half and go in essentially in a close football game. And I thought in the second half, we just continued to settle in with some of the adjustments that we made in game and found our footing and took off in all three phases. And I say all three phases intentionally because, special teams is and has been a component of what it is that we do and the way that we engineer victory. Can't say enough about our block units. It's not just an agenda for us. We try to live it. We develop skills in that area. If you just look at the type of guys that have blocked kicks for us in recent experience, Minka's a safety, Connor's a tight end, Dean is a defensive lineman, Miles Killebrew is a safety. They play various home positions, but they're all teamers, and that's the way we work, to develop skill in that area, to not make any assumptions regarding who is capable of what, and to position ourselves to take advantage of opportunities. And I just can't say enough about Danny and that group and how they make that vision reality. I did talk to New York, and they did tell me Minka's block was legal, which I knew in stadium, but that's life. None of us are perfect, man. There's gonna be mistakes made in game. There's strategic mistakes made by guys like me. There's playing mistakes made by players, and there's officiating mistakes. The bottom line is, if you're capable and you're on your job for 60 minutes, mistakes by others often doesn't define the outcome of games. But it is a shame because that was a significant play by Mink, and it did create a two-point scenario for them that kind of could have changed the texture of how that game was unfolding. But that's life, man. You got to smile in the face of it, and I expect our group to do so. From a health standpoint, Mon Adams sustained a knee injury in game. He could be characterized as out as we sit here today. Don't have a lot of details about the trajectory of what needs to transpire or how long he may be out. I just know that he's out as we stand here today in terms of this week. Got a couple of guys that are positioning themselves to return to action. Tyler at the linebacker position is in position to work his way back to us, and so is Patterson at running back. And so, like in all circumstances, we'll first start with limited participation and then look at the amount of that participation and the quality of that participation to determine whether or not we'll consider those guys as we get close to game time. Dante Jackson went down in game with a shoulder, but that could be described as minor. It may affect him at the front part of this week and limit his participation, but in no means do I expect it to limit his game availability. The rest of the injuries are kind of status quo. No new news on some of those extended people, guys like Nick Herbig and Zach Frazier and others. Nothing to add in terms of their availability. I do expect KZ to be back in action. He was a partial participant at the beginning of last week and moved to a full participant. But as we got close to game time, we thought it was prudent that we wait another week to include him. I don't expect any restrictions with him, to be quite honest, because he was at the doorstep of availability on Sunday night. Now turning our attentions toward the Giants. When you look at their offense, it starts with Daniel Jones for us and the many ways that they utilize his talents. The design run has my attention, particularly because he's coming off of an injury. I don't know that I expected to see as much design running from him and them in 2024 as I've seen, but he is a talented guy in that area. The QB draws and the QB counters and the zone read keeps are a major component of what they do. And it's simply a mathematics thing, if you will. If you got a guy in the middle of the field, which usually we do, Mika, and they're utilizing the quarterback to run, they're essentially playing 11 on 10. And so, you know, we got to defeat blocks and come off of blocks and make tackles. That's how you minimize quarterback running. Very rarely are we interested in going zero and things of that nature that others are. And that's no secret. That's just philosophical approaches to ball. And so we better do a really good job of coming off of blocks and working to minimize some of those things. They're also really good at their spread football, his rhythm passing, his ability to spread the ball around to a number of different eligibles. Johnson is an interesting talent at tight end. Familiar with him, obviously, from Penn State. And there's been a lot written and said about Neighbors and got a lot of video of Neighbors and his talents, man. He's got really good separation ability. His stop and start, his ability to create space at breakpoints. And you couple that with a real competitive spirit and strong hands. He attacks the ball when it's in the air. He makes those competitive plays. And that's why he's drafted as high as he's drafted. Those guys that get an opportunity to hug Roger Goodell, man, it's usually because of some real tangible things and some real intangible things. And he has both, and he has our attention in that regard. They've had some shuffling in the offensive line, particularly in recent weeks at left tackle. You know, don't know what to expect in terms of some of that. I'd imagine there'll be some changes there. Just reflecting on last week's game. And so, you know, I think that's always a challenge when you're playing a group like this, man, the unknown, as they pivot to correct their ills or to best position themselves to win. Oftentimes it creates questions for groups like us. And so we're leaning in on this week with respect to that and what they're capable of, their ability to adjust and some of the talents that they have, particularly as it pertains to the mobility with Daniel Jones. On the defensive side of the ball, it starts up front with them. Dexter Lawrence is a problem. He is. He's a problem in the running game. He's a problem in the passing game. I think he leads the NFL in sacks. But he's just a dominant, dominant player. I remember when I took those guys out to dinner when he came out of Clemson a number of years back, and, you know, I was sitting having a conversation with him and Christian Wilkins, and they were sitting on a love seat, man, and that love seat was crowded. And Christian Wilkins looked really small. And we all know Christian is not small. And so that's what I think about when I think about him, man. His career is kind of bear that thought out. He is a dominant player. You're not going to get a lot done unless you're prepared to put four hands on him. Guys like Ryan McCollum, who are getting an opportunity to ascend and play, it's going to be a significant challenge, but we better do more than wish Ryan McCollum luck. We better give him some schematic help and be highly sensitive to this man's capabilities, and not only his capabilities, but just simply what he's putting on tape week in and week out as we sit here right now. Burns was a big offseason acquisition for them, and you know, you see why. He is a dominant edge presence. You know, as significant as Lawrence is on the interior, he's equally significant on the perimeter, and they really kind of work hand in hand with interior people collapsing the pocket and the edge people working your tackles. Man, they got a veteran D-line coaching group and Andre Patterson and Brian Cox. Man, I got a lot of respect for those guys, and you just see the spirit of those two men in the play of the guys that play for the Giants. They got top quality talent in the secondary, although it may lack experience in some cases. Tay Banks is a second year player, first rounder. Newbin is a second rounder, a rookie from Minnesota, highly thought of in draft. And their nickel is a third rounder out of Kentucky. Liked him a lot in draft preparation. So those guys might be somewhat new to the National Football League, but they certainly have the capabilities. And they have our attention, man. I think they do a really nice job of mixing up a variety of coverage schematics, be it spot drop zones, man-to-mans, relatable zones, and pressures. They do a really good job of challenging you schematically in that area, and it's not only the rush. The secondary mix is a component of why I think they're fifth or sixth in the league versus the pass. And in the special teams game, we got to be on our P's and Q's there. They got some top quality players, some guys that are tough schematic matchups, guys that are often too big for DBs to handle and too athletic for linebackers to handle. And one name that comes to mind is Isaiah Simmons, former first rounder from Clemson, is kind of reflective of that. He's an oversized safety or a super athletic linebacker, if you will, and those are the type of guys that create mismatch issues in special teams as you try to figure out how to best position yourselves in terms of matching man on man. And so we got an additional day to work, and we're excited about that. When we get an additional day, we usually do Friday twice. Friday is situational football for us. Those plays are weighted differently. Oftentimes they shape the texture of the game. They define how the game unfolds. We know that. We respect that. And so when given an additional day, that's where we choose to direct our additional time and energy towards some of those weighty moments, position ourselves to win those circumstantial or situational plays. I'll pause and open it up for questions.
Mike, when you looked back at the tape, what did you like that you saw from Russ after his slow start?
You know, his poise, I thought his experience was really evident. He was unmoved and unshaken by the lack of fluidity with the start. But I think that's kind of reflective of a guy that's done it at a high level for over a decade, a guy that's a world champion, a guy that's whatever, 9-10-time Pro Bowler. He's just seen a lot in this game, and that's in his back pocket, just like his throwing abilities. And it gets you in and out of circumstances, certainly.
Mike, what's the next step that you want to see Russ and the offense together take?
You know, play winning football and to engineer and construct victory more fluidly. I think that is our goal as a collective or subsections of that collective every week. How can we, engineer victory more consistently and more fluidly?
Not just looking at the offense, but offense and defense in the second half. The offense is second in points per game. Defense is first in points per game. What are you guys doing well, where you guys are playing so well in the second half?
You know, I think that we do a good job of identifying our issues in game. And I think we do a good job of organizing our thoughts in terms of how we choose to address them in game. And oftentimes halftime is the cleanest opportunity to get the bulk of that work done. But we don't wait until halftime. Adjustments and adapting to in-game circumstances, I think, is just a component of good football. I think you got to challenge your staff in that way, and I think you also have to train your players in that way. That's the way we approach practice. We try to simulate that in practice-like settings. A component of that is practicing good on good sometimes, even when sometimes the schematics may not necessarily benefit you. We'll work Steelers versus Steelers this week, and it might not necessarily benefit the units directly in terms of preparing for the Giants, but that competitive environment where you're thinking on your feet and you're adjusting and you're having to adapt to some of the different things that you see, whether it's personnel or schematics, I think whets our appetite to do the things that you outlined.
How would you assess the performance of Ryan McCollum?
I thought it was double thumbs up. Again, I'm not surprised by that. As I mentioned when I talked about Ryan last week, he's mature beyond his years. He brings a really professional approach. He's really urgent in everything he does, and I just think that tees you up for performance. I don't think any of us were surprised that he was above the line in terms of how he performed last week. But as I mentioned, this week is a new week, and with new weeks comes new challenges, and some of them big in the form of Dexter Lawrence.
And regardless of which receiver he was guarding, how did you think Joey performed this week? And to the collective of the secondary, how did they adapt to the late add of Adams to the mix there?
I thought Joey was really solid. And I think he is getting more solid because of the attention to detail and the urgency that he's taking to practice. He's really evolving as a developing professional in terms of where to set his energy and focus his energies in practice settings. And oftentimes that changes week to week because of the challenges that you face change week to week. The schematics you choose to employ change week to week. The talent on the other side changes, and so it requires different adjustments. I think that he's no longer taking a cookie cutter's approach to his prep. I think he's got enough experience now where he's able to cater his approach to best position him to perform with a high level of consistency. And in the secondary, I just think that we do a really good job of communicating continually, pregame, in-game. We were talking about the adjustment component. A lot of that is secondary related. I think we got some really stable pieces back there, guys like Minka who've been around and been a component of our program and are really stabilizing presences in regards to your question, but also some of the guys that are new to us are not new to the NFL. Can't say enough about guys like D. Jackson and D. Elliott and what they've been able to give us in terms of some of those things. When you work with new guys, oftentimes you know about their talents. I'm familiar with D. Jackson and D. Elliott's talents. We've played against them a lot over the years and scouted them and so forth, but to work with them day to day and to see their professional approach to business, how they articulate and absorb football, it's been awesome, and it's probably one of the reasons why we're able to adjust the way that we are.
Mike, what's allowed that communication to improve? Because I know that a couple weeks ago, that's one of the things you were talking about with the defense.
I just think it's continual growth. I think it's a challenge playing at home, to be honest with you, from a defensive perspective, particularly when the home game environment is like ours. It's a challenge for our opponent's offense. It's a challenge for us as a defense. And I think particularly when I think about that specific component of it, communication, I think that we're adapting. We're getting better. We're gaining more fluidity in terms of how we need to deal with the challenges of working in Akershore.
In regards to Minka's block, why has the competition committee been resistant to maybe opening that up to replay review?
I don't know that the committee has, and as a member of the committee, I can confirm that we haven't been resistant. I don't know where you get that bit of information from.
Well, I mean, replay review overall. I know a couple years ago you had the pass interference that could be reviewed. That was a one-year experiment, but it just seems like...
So you just took a little attitude in terms of that question? in terms of replay review, I just think as a collective, we're proceeding with caution in terms of the infusion of technology into the game. And I just think that's the posture that, as a collective, that we've always had. We're not resistant to technology and advancements in technology, but we're methodical and intentional about it, the infusion of it in terms of the game and how much we do. We're continually biting off more of that, using expanding replay review this year in certain areas of the game, and we just simply want to crawl, walk, run in regards to some of those things. And sometimes run is not good either in terms of allocation of manpower and understanding the unintended consequences of moving in a certain direction.
To that point, Mike, how did you feel the expedited review was allocated on that third and one, which could have been a fourth and one when Lazard stretched in the first half?
I don't have any beefs about any of that, to be honest with you.
Mike, with all the bodies you had to move up front, how have you been able to sustain your running game? And also, Najee's had a lot of chunk runs last year and even again this year. Any particular reason for that?
I just think that, we got a collective of young guys who are growing and growing together. And I think cohesion is a component of it. Continuity is a component of it. And so it's reasonable to expect those things to get better. Our collective of Pat and Darnell at tight end is in its second year. Some of our young offensive linemen have been around a little bit now. They've kind of grown up with Naj, Dan Moore, for example. And so I think it's reasonable to expect a cumulative effect to reveal itself in regards to some of that. But also just in general, man, I got to give our guys a lot of credit. Week in and week out, we just assess what's available to us, our resources, whether it's manpower or what have you, and we formulate a plan that we think's workable. And those guys work the plan. And so those guys deserve a lot of the credit, guys that we've been talking about, like Ryan McCollum and others, who are adapting and taking advantage of opportunities and living out their dreams.
Mike, a lot of those chunk runs have come late in games, like the Chargers game, I think of the Raiders last week. Is that just a testament to maybe just stick with it, and if it doesn't go smoothly early, we just build?
I think that's just football. I think that anybody has a commitment to running the football is going to wage a war of attrition, if you will. That's what happens when I see, Derrick Henry break out. Late in games, man, he's been beating on people for hour and a half, 2 hours. The dam eventually breaks.
Mike, what is it about Russell Wilson's deep ball that makes it so effective, or what is it about it that's maybe different from how other quarterbacks throw it?
I don't know that it is. He has arm talent. He has arm strength. He's got ability to change his trajectory. He's got pinpoint accuracy in terms of dropping balls, and so he's very talented in that area. I don't know that there's anything going on mechanically different that distinguishes it.
What about play action, Mike? What makes Russ so good in the play action game?
Running game. Play action is only effective if you got a commitment and an effective running game.
But following up on that, you guys have called play action a lot this year, and I believe he got like over 150 yards on play action passes. I think you guys had just over 200 going into this game. What does he do really well on play action that unlocks maybe deeper passing of those plays?
Sometimes it's just not always him. You guys are pulling from a very small sample size. It might just be how the New York Jets chose to play defense. They play a lot of man-to-man. We lined up in some bunches and did some play action passes, and like Calvin came free late. And so sometimes it's not about us, to be quite honest with you, particularly if you're just talking about a small sample size. You can write a story on a collection of plays, but it's not necessarily reality. And I think anything in terms of an analysis of Russ regarding our play pass relative to other games, the answers might just lie in the fact that it's a small sample size versus one opponent.
When you guys acquired Justin Fields, you talked about how there could be a benefit to him learning behind or learning alongside Russell Wilson. Just with the dynamic now changing, how would you like Justin to make the most of the current situation?
I just want Justin to be prepared to get ready to play like he's done. I'm refusing to acknowledge whatever changes you just acknowledged. We're building a plan to beat the New York Football Giants this week. We got two capable guys. We're going to ready them. They both need to be ready to work.
Mike, that trajectory that you mentioned with Russ's deep ball, how much does that help receivers with 50-50 balls when he can put that much air under it?
Again, I just, I don't know how unique it is. I think everybody that throws a good deep ball has got air under it.
Mike,
You mentioned stabilizing presences in your secondary, a guy like Micah Fitzpatrick. What do those players, maybe even some of the veterans, do for some of those young guys like Beanie Bishop?
They steady the waters, and they're really good communicators. And sometimes good communication is not vocally in the moment, but it's before the moment. If it's 3rd and 11 and we're in a defensive huddle, and he's able to say, hey, Beanie, watch out. Remember, on 3rd down and 11, they have a propensity to do this. And that way, when you're at the line of scrimmage, oftentimes you've checked certain boxes and you've talked about certain things. And so the veteran player is sees around corners some, behind the chains, hey, watch the screen. Oftentimes, young and inexperienced players focus their energies on what it is they need to do, the baseline execution of assignments. Whereas guys that have been doing it for a while, particularly at a high level, they're so beyond that. They look at game circumstances, offensive personnel usage, offensive formation structure. There's a lot of means of gathering information. The key is, how do you share that information across a defense?
Mike, Cam's going to be in his 202nd regular season game on Monday night. That's the most ever by a defensive player at this, passing two guys with gold jackets. Why has he been able to be effective at a position that doesn't really lend itself to a lot of longevity? And then maybe, does he sort of buy into the Steeler way? I mean, was that sort of evident from the get-go? Because the things that he does off the field seems to embody what you guys want to talk about.
It's who he is. That's why we were attracted to him. He brought that with him from Columbus, Ohio. In terms of why he's able to be uniquely effective for a long period of time, he's a power player who happens to be athletic. Those power players grow old more gracefully than the oversized athletes. I imagine at 45 you couldn't move Cam out of a gap. You know what I mean? The power players generally age more gracefully, and he is a power player.
Mike, how do you assess Broderick Jones and how he's grown this year, just looking at his play?
I like the solid trajectory of his growth and development. He had some challenges early on in team development. He missed some time and so forth due to minor injuries. But just largely looking at the trajectory of his play, I'm pleased with it. I like the professional approach that he brings to work. And I just think it's moving in the right direction, and it needs to continue.
Mike, was Robin Wilson scratched because he had the hammy? And how is he this week? Is available?
No. He missed some practice time because of the hammy. And as we've talked repeatedly in this setting, Roman needs to work for me to really consider him. His participation got compromised some last week, and so really once it got compromised, I moved on.
Mike, with all the changes you guys have dealt with on the offensive line, has there been a growth in what you guys can ask of them to do in the run game, different looks that you couldn't call as much of earlier in the season that you feel more comfortable about now?
I think that we're just still finding our footing in terms of what we're capable of and what we're able to manage schematically, because we just hadn't had real consistency within the group. Those are strong questions that we're pondering week in and week out. We don't carry things just to carry things, to be quite honest with you. We carry things if we need it. We're still determining whether or not the schematics and the talents of the Giants require a big menu or not this week, but that's questions that we ponder week in and week out. It not only is relevant to our state, but the schematics and the talents of the people that we play.
Mike, how did James Pierre do subbing for Dante, and is that why you brought him back?
That is why I brought him back. James is highly professional, always ready, very detailed. He doesn't back down from challenges, man. He is the type of a guy that you don't find yourself putting direct eyes on, even though he's infused into the game. And I think that's the biggest compliment that I can give him as a coach. When we put him in the game, I was still watching the game as opposed to watching him.
Mike, I just want to make, for clarity's sake, based on your answer to Mike's question, is Russell going to start on Monday?
He's scheduled to take first team reps when we begin tomorrow. We'll see where the week leads us.
How difficult is it to have that conversation with a player like Justin, where he's, as you said, he's been very solid and his role is going to switch to what it was? I mean, how difficult is that to stuff?
I don't worry about the difficulty of conversations. It's about whether or not they're necessary. We're pursuing big business here. Comfort is not a component of what we're chasing.
Anyone else?
Well, just real quick, what you said about Zach and Herbig at the start for injuries, you said no status changes. Is that for the start of the week or for game day you're talking about?
For the start of the week. We'll see where the week leads us.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks, guys.
Very interesting doings there. The little back and forth. The Mike Tomlin presser reaction brought to you by Allegiant Community Federal Credit Union. 4.75% on a 7-month CD with just $1,000 new money. Full details at AllegiantFCU.org. And by your local Parmore stores. Remember, if there's not a Parmore store near you now, there will be soon. Brian Batko of the Post-Gazette has joined me for the rest of the show. What a wonderful man he is. Brian, what I heard was Tomlin not wanting to commit to Russell Wilson in any kind of official public way. Didn't want to get sucked into even vague Fields-Wilson comparisons where Fields would come out looking bad. Even if the questions didn't include Fields' name, it was obvious when people wanted to compare Russ's play action, deep ball, all that, who they were comparing him to. Tomlin wasn't buying in, and you had him saying New York told him the Minka call was bad, wasn't highly complimentary of Roman Wilson, made Daniel Jones sound like Burt Jones when he won MVP for the Colts, and finally wondered if Ray Fittipaldo had an attitude. What a show that was.
And some love seat chatter. I wasn't expecting to hear so much about love seats in Mike Tomlin's
press
conference.
Yeah, that was big. Or small, as the case may be.
Made small by Dexter Lawrence, Giants defensive tackle.
What's going on here with the quarterbacks? Was that his strategy? It sounded like it to me to not even sort of indirectly make Justin Fields sound bad. And also, at the same time, not yet willing to just say Russ is the guy, right?
Yeah, I went into this presser today, Joe, thinking there's been a cooling of tensions. You know, after 6, really 7 weeks of asking about this and fielding questions about it from the media corps, figure there's not really a lot going on after what Russell Wilson was able to do Sunday night, and yet still some carryover, some spillover from last week's playing coy, keeping it in house, whatever you want to call that. Tact from Tomlin, and yeah, I thought that was a good observation by you, that even though there's not as much suspense going on right now, still kind of a little interesting nugget there that he didn't want to acknowledge, essentially, that Justin Fields has gone to the bench, but that's reality.
Right, there is no more mystery, but I think this stems to his production meeting with the NBC guys the other night.
That was interesting again. Well, I guess 2 weeks ago it was Russell Wilson's own words that kind of made headlines out of that pre-production meeting. But yeah,
what were they 2 weeks ago? Refresh my memory on that.
That he was healthy and ready to play.
Ah,
and,
yes.
And win the seventh, of course, was also mentioned.
Win the seventh, which has become a saying now. This week it was, if you were watching the broadcast the other night, Collinsworth was recounting their production meeting with Tomlin.
Yeah, they both were.
And Tirico, yeah. And they said Tomlin told them both are capable of being our number one quarterback. It's going to be determined on the grass. When? I don't know. We'll know when we get there. He doesn't want to yet fully commit. I'm sure he just wants to see a few more weeks because here's why. Here's why he doesn't want to fully commit just yet publicly. Because of what Collinsworth said Tomlin told them at the end of the production meeting, which was this. And these are Collinsworth's exact words. The final point was, he said, if I go back to Justin, it's over. We're staying there. Which to me means that Russ is really going to have to screw this up to lose this job now. And I understand. Listen, Mike deserves all the credit for how I thought he mangled last year's quarterback situation. And maybe the year before too. But this year, who could argue with what he's done? And now his strategy to me is clear, Brian. It's why would I say he's my guy public? Let's see him play another game or two. Why don't we? You know?
So far, so good with Tomlin's feel for this quarterback situation. Absolutely. And yeah, I mean, even throughout that presser, I mean, every time a question about something Russell Wilson does well, he didn't want to go over the top in praising him. And sort of some of that sort of just Tomlin speak, right? I mean, you have to have kind of an all-time historic performance to get a ton of praise from him, or be T.J. Watt on some of those.
But he did say after the game, he said Russell was, quote, excellent.
Yeah, yeah, that's a big superlative for Tomlin.
Yeah. Was some of this sparing Fields, do you think, in not going over the top on Russell?
He also mentioned there that, you know, those difficult conversations, too, that he was asked about. And, you know, obviously reading between the lines there, it's, hey, telling a young guy who was playing fairly well and had you at 4-2 that we're going to go in a different direction. And the old breakup, it's not you, it's me. You know, he said that's what he gets paid to do, essentially, is have those difficult conversations. And beyond how he handles it behind closed doors one-on-one with guys, I think he's also been around long enough, of course, to know how to massage it via the media, too, and not step in it, mostly say the right things, keep people engaged. The funny thing to me always, too, about Tomlin, Joe, with quarterbacks is we're always kind of entering unknown territory with him, because other than the Kenny Pickett circumstance from a couple years ago, him coming in as a first rounder, most of this is new territory for him. He inherited Ben and didn't have to deal with this weekly drama of how to handle young versus old quarterback controversy. All of this, he's still kind of learning as he goes.
How about the Ray Fittipaldo situation? Does he lose nicest man in Pittsburgh sports status when he gets called out by Tomlin for an attitude there? That was incredible.
Did he say attitude or latitude?
Have I lost?
I heard it more attitude than latitude. Well, we have the
we
got to
hear it.
Yeah, why don't we hear the quote? I thought he said something to the effect of, you're getting an attitude on that question. Let's hear it. Let's hear it coming up. Why don't we tease
no,
to
no
it
No one's
next?
Ever accused Ray of having an attitude.
I know.
So I'm very eager to hear this one.
This is palace intrigue right here. This is unbelievable. All right, so we're going to hear that. We're going to hear Tomlin telling us what New York told him, meaning the NFL told him, about the Minka play, which led into the whole Ray Fittipaldo back and forth. But the most interesting thing, I think we agree, is him seemingly wanting to protect Justin Fields in all those veiled questions, which were basically this. Hey, Russell has a better deep ball than Justin. He's a better play action guy than, you know, et cetera. You know what I mean?
The first one was pretty straightforward. I mean, hey, Justin Fields is no longer the starter. How are you seeing him operate? And it was sort of like, not so fast. And then that's when our pal Will Graves chimed in at the end there. And just to be clear.
Yeah, the Graves digger always comes back for more, doesn't he?
Yes, Will? He does.
It's incredible. Yes, everybody loves Raymond. Forget about the quarterbacks here. We have to get to the bottom of the Ray Fittipaldo controversy. What is going on here? It started as a question about whether such plays as Minka's from the other day can be reviewed. I texted Ray if Tomlin said attitude or latitude to him.
Big difference.
Changes in attitudes. You know that song by Jimmy Buffett?
No, I only know
Margarita. We would all go insane. That one.
No, I know Margaritaville, Cheeseburger in Paradise. I think that's about it.
Joe, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. If only we could find the music. I guess we're not allowed to play it. It's those changes in latitudes, changes in... You know that song, right? Limits?
Yes, remember the first concert I attended, Joe. It was a Jimmy Buffett concert.
You're a parrot head, City Limits.
Limits
the
family.
The entire Bechtold family was there for the Jimmy Buffett concert.
How old were you? Were you sipping wine coolers?
I was like 12, Brian. This was a while ago.
The perfect age for that.
His whole family cried together at a Buffett show,
Well, no
said.
One was crying.
You told me they cried.
Nobody cried. Why would they be crying at a celebration?
There's a lot of emotions at a Jimmy Buffett concert, I imagine.
I'm confusing that with you and your dad crying at Rudy? Or where did you and your dad
Field
cry?
Of Dreams? I don't
know. Dreams.
Maybe?
You just told me last week you and your dad cried together at
Rudolph
something.
The Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Oh, that's
when
right.
Clarice sings There's Always Tomorrow for Dreams to Come True.
That's it. And that morphs into the question.
Pretty different than a Jimmy Buffett concert, but go on, Joe.
Yes.
Is Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer a sports movie, Brian?
No. And I'm curious to hear your angle as to why, because they have a few games that he's not allowed
to play the reindeer games akin to the Olympic games for deer, of course. And then you had Rudolph's big break, plus his breakthrough with Clarissa was from a coming of age story. Yeah, the flying tryout with a coach with a whistle and a hat on. Remember,
is flying a sport?
Limits, flying a sport?
I think flying is a sport for birds. I don't know.
All right, can we hear the Ray Tomlin tete-a-tete?
Let's set this up. It was about whether the Minka play was reviewable. Tomlin said he heard from New York that they got the call wrong, which he said he knew. We all knew. It was a crap call. But Ray wanted to follow up with what is reviewable and what's not, and the competition committee and their role in this, and Tomlin's on the competition committee. I have a text out to Ray saying, did Tomlin say attitude or latitude to you? He usually gets right back to me. Is he back there talking to Tomlin right now? Following up right now?
I was the one who thought it was latitude when we were back there in the booth with City. Because I don't think I've ever heard Mike Tomlin accuse a reporter of taking an attitude, even if he was doing
especially
it somewhat jokingly.
Ray.
Especially Ray, who's probably the most stoic man in that room.
I mean, he's the nicest man this side of Jerry DePaula and that side of Marc-Andre Fleury. It's the three of them, the triumvirate of nicest men in Pittsburgh sports media history.
Yeah, maybe a little bit of a hornet's nest there with Tomlin because he's on that committee.
Maybe.
Felt like
maybe he was sensitive to it. Maybe Ray did take an attitude, but it would be surprising. Plus, we weren't there. We could only hear it. Let's hear it for everybody here and decide for ourselves, Limits.
In regards to Minka's block, why has the competition committee been resistant to maybe opening that up to replay review?
I don't know that the committee has, and as a member of the committee, I can confirm that we haven't been resistant. I don't know where you get that bit of information from.
Well, I mean, replay review overall. I know a couple years ago you had the pass interference that could be reviewed. That was a one-year experiment, but it just seems like...
So you just took a little attitude in terms of that question? you know, in terms of replay review,
hold on.
I just think
so. What did he say?
Latitude, I think, because Ray,
no,
there was no
said,
attitude in the question.
He said, "Did you take a little Did he say latitude or attitude?
So you just took a little attitude in terms of that question.
I say attitude. You took a little attitude in terms of.
It just seems like
so you just took a little attitude in terms of that question.
No, I think he meant you zoomed in on the Minka play and making that reviewable, but then Ray kind of broadened it to all penalties, including pass interference. There was no attitude in that question, so I can't imagine.
In that answer, you mean. Or no, in that question.
In Ray's question, yeah. I don't know.
At the beginning, Ray, but we weren't there.
Resistant. The word
when
resistance.
When you hear that, you hear attitude. Now, it may have been latitude, but Tomlin said attitude. At least that's... What did you hear, Limits?
I heard attitude at first, but listening back, it's that weird thing with your ears that you can hear what you want to hear.
It seems like the L was done. He was done with the L and on to a word that begins with A. That's what I heard. Let's hear the whole exchange again. The whole thing.
In regards to Minka's block, why has the competition committee been resistant to maybe opening that up to replay review?
I don't know that the committee has, and as a member of the committee, I can confirm that we haven't been. I don't know where you get that bit of information from.
Well, I mean, replay review overall. I know a couple years ago you had the pass interference that could be reviewed. That was a one-year experiment, but it just seems like
so you just took a little attitude in terms of that question. you know, in terms of replay review,
I
just think
it's
a
50-50. In the end.
Yeah, it's 50-50.
Tomlin was good-natured on it, but he also didn't like the initial question.
I don't think he liked the word resistant at all. And that's when he said, I'm on the committee, which Ray knows and a lot of us know.
Right. He said, we're not resistant at all. I don't know where you got that bit of information from. So the conversation had already taken a turn to mildly
feisty, confrontational.
And why won't Ray return my text? I want to get to the bottom of this. Limits,
they
give me your conclusion.
They could be hashing it out.
They might be battling it out right now, or maybe Ray has important work to do
after
the press conference.
That's why I'm here. I'm off today from the Post-Gazette. Ray is working today for the Post-Gazette, so surely he's crafting something off of that presser, and hopefully he'll get back to us soon with his
What are the texters? What did the texters hear?
The texters are conflicted. Half the texters say attitude, half the texters say latitude.
He said you took some latitude with that. Okay, I can see that. You took some latitude with that question.
Because Ray then said overall, penalties, reviews. So that's why I think Tomlin said you're taking some latitude with this Minka situation.
What do you mean latitude?
It'd be way more exciting if it's attitude.
Yeah, he's expanding it to pass interference. That's the latitude.
And all replay review, yeah.
I think that was obvious in the first question because he said, why won't the competition committee include a play like the one Minka did?
I personally don't want them to. I want fewer reviews, but that's just me. I mean, you want more reviews. You want a five-hour game because they keep looking at every penalty.
What you just said was flawed. More things to be reviewed. More, a wider number of plays to be reviewed.
Which will lead to more reviews.
No, it won't. You have the same amount of reviews.
You still have the same amount of challenges.
Challenges.
At your disposal, but if it's inside 2 minutes, that comes down from the booth. Now you can review all these judgment calls.
Here's what I think. And Belichick said this a number of years ago. Everything in the rule book is reviewable, but you only get your same challenge system. Right? But you're saying when New York pipes in for their own challenges, that can only happen in the final 2 minutes. Am I right about that?
And now all scoring plays, all turnovers.
Okay. So they're going to do that anyway.
Right. If there's a scoring play...
If the idea of replay, Brian, which was instituted 50 years ago with the Renfro play, was to get rid of the egregious error, to make sure the right team wins.
Texas-Georgia was a great example of that this weekend. Did you see that? The fans started throwing the bottles on the field.
Yes.
That was a nice little workaround by those officials, I think, because there's no review, technically, but one of them must have caught a glimpse of it. Came over to the guy who called and said, "We cannot call this penalty, John. You need to go tell them that we discussed it and we're switching it."
Right.
And that's what happened.
But what I'm talking about is, what's the difference? Why can you review
yardage lines, first downs, breaking the plane.
Breaking the plane, sure. Or a spot, first down spot. But you can't review an action, plus any scoring play, but you can't review a block that just took points, a point off the board, and led the other team to go for 2 points. That's a direct impact on the scoring of the game. How in the world is that not reviewable?
Well, you wouldn't be reviewing the block. You'd be reviewing the penalty that was called on the block. Just like you can't review, George Pickens catches a touchdown over Sauce Gardner, and now the Jets say, "We think that was offensive pass interference.
Why shouldn't Why shouldn't that be reviewable? Because it would lead to too many reviews?"
I personally think that, yes, that's what the officials are there for, to make judgment calls. That's what that's baked into the penalty system, throwing a flag. I personally am just someone who can live with human error in sports, but I know there are more who are.
Oh, so can I. Believe me, I would have two challenges and that's it. But if you can live with human error, then why not just scrap the replays? Why pick and choose on replay then? Just forget about it.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, that it's arbitrary judgment.
Very
what's
arbitrary.
A judgment call? What's a catch?
No,
obviously,
no, no.
Everybody
no,
reviews
no.
a catch.
What's to be reviewed is arbitrary. Oh, we'll review the spot on that first down at your own 23 with 8 minutes left in the first quarter. But we won't review whether that guy used his hands to catapult himself to block the game-winning field goal, if it came down to that. You know what I mean? Which is more important to review?
Well, that's what Ray was saying in his question. What was it, a few years, 2019, they had the trial run for challenging pass interference calls, and it seemed like that didn't really satiate a lot of people. It still felt like people were mad about missed calls, even once it was reviewed. There was the one Steelers-Seahawks, Terrell Edmonds, was embroiled in one of those.
Right.
I think it was week two. It was the week that Ben blew out his elbow and Mason Rudolph came in.
Well, let's hear Mike DeFabo's question, because this led to an interesting back and forth on Russell Wilson and Fields. We'll listen to that.